Now the Three Martini Lunch with Greg Corumbus and Jim Garrity.
And welcome to another special holiday edition of the Three Martini Lunch. We are in McLaughlin-style mode, handing out all sorts of different awards for good, bad, and otherwise achievement for 2010 in the year of politics. Jim and I are in our virtual tuxedos in a semicircle. And we are today looking at mainly how the media treated different stories, political and otherwise, this year. Which story was most underreported, which one was most overreported, and what was simply the biggest story politically in the year 2010. So, Jim, what do you believe was the most underreported story of the year?
In every election cycle, the U.S. House races are kind of the redheaded stepchild of all the different races that get covered by the national press. You know, obviously, the Senate races get a lot of attention, the governor's races. In a presidential year, nobody pays any attention to the House, unfortunately. It's just kind of a given because of the drama of a presidential campaign. And I understand why this is. You know, there are 435 House districts. In a normal year, you get about 30 to 40 good ones, and you know, that's a lot to keep track of. And in a year like this, I think you probably had about 100, 110 races that were good and competitive. And the other one other big reason is, Greg, if I say to you California, you know, you're a smart guy, you know where California is.
Right.
Maybe you've been there. You can get a picture in your mind of certain places and images. But if I say, Greg, let's take a look at California's 51st district, and Right. Maybe you know where that is, maybe you don't. You know, maybe if you live down in Southern California along the border and in the eastern corner of the state, you may care a great deal about it. If you don't, it's just a spot on a map. And so I understand why people don't get into House races as much as they do other ones. But I think that's where a really big story was developing this year. And on a campaign spot, I tried to put as much attention on this as possible. I mean, early on, the NRCC was saying they were feeling good. And I said, well, this one could be in play. This one could be in play. If things break our way, you could be seeing a lot. And one of the stories of this year was that each passing month, each passing season, things stayed there, you know, breaking their way. The healthcare vote, the primaries, the summer wore on, et cetera. So there's only one paying attention to these big statewide races. But I think the House races are where the really big shift occurred. And we saw this on Election Day with 63 House races being flipped. And a lot of the talking heads, probably less so at our fine publications and broadcast outlets, but at, say, some of the talking heads you'll see on cable don't pay too much attention to House races because, frankly, it's a lot of work.
Right. I picked the war in Afghanistan. It seems like weeks at a time when things that are very vapid are getting a lot of attention, particularly on the internet and cable news, that the war on terror just simply continues to take a back seat, except when there's a major political element happening in Washington, whether it's a vote on funding or a huge debate on tactics and strategy, which we really haven't seen for about a year now, ever since Obama came up with his revised strategy. It just seems like because it's far away, maybe it's hard to get to, and maybe they don't get ratings when they talk about it, but for whatever reason, the fact that America remains at war, you'd think would remain in the headlines, and it just doesn't seem to. On to over-reported story of the year. Go for it.
Well, I'm tempted to go with the Lindsay Lohan you know, trying to break out of a rehab one, but I would note, and you know, again, kind of looking at campaign coverage, there was maybe a week where after the New York primary, where it looked like Carl Palladino might make a New York State governor's race competitive against Andrew Cuomo, very well-known, well-funded state attorney general, a guy who had every reason to think he was going to win by a wide margin. Polls closed a little bit. It looked like it might be getting competitive. And then Carl Palladino started having one insane confrontation after another. And eventually, you know, like within 2 weeks, he was making the guy who had the slogan, "The rent is too darn high," look normal and well-balanced and easygoing. So I think once Carl Palladino started trailing by the 10, 15, 20 points again, there wasn't any point to any of the national coverage you saw of – I understand why New York would be covering it in depth, but the rest of the country doesn't have much stake in the bid of a long-shot guy who keeps spouting off and getting into fights with reporters. And so I think the whole point of that was just so that mainstream media publications could say, hey, look, here's a Republican candidate who sounds like a maniac, you know. Voters, draw your own conclusions. Aren't those Republicans a bunch of maniacs? Now, some people may be surprised that I'm saying the Palladino race and not the Christine O'Donnell race, which apparently got the single most coverage of any Senate race in the country. But in that one, you could at least argue that her primary fight against Mike Castle is a legitimate grassroots versus establishment fight and said a lot about the conflict amongst Republicans and conservatives, et cetera. So at least there you can understand the angle that was driving so much of the coverage. There wasn't that kind of coverage for Palladino. And so I think that kind of, you know, like beyond the occasional him swinging a baseball bat, and the occasional, you know, him getting to a fight with a New York Post reporter, I don't think it needed the total level of coverage that it ended up getting. And I think, you know, kind of an interesting kind of contrast with this, there was a lot of coverage of Alvin Green for good reason, the bizarre scenario of him winning a winning the primary when nobody'd heard of him. But after a while, I think about the time he started howling at a television reporter, they just stopped and said, oh, this is starting to get embarrassing and weird and kind of creepy, and we're just going to, you know, not look any further. We're going to avert our eyes. And so I think that was kind of the at some point that the Paladino race warranted that. It didn't, and I have a suspicion a lot of it was just to say, hey, look, Republicans are crazy.
Delaware, I'm not going to let you take that. I'm taking the Delaware Senate race as the overreported story of the year because, yes, the primary, although Christine O'Donnell didn't really narrow the gap until the last couple weeks, and then that coverage was legitimate. Once it was pretty clear that despite her money bomb and everything else that was coming in supposedly on her behalf, all the stuff from Bill Maher, and just the fact that it's a Democratic state, we pretty much knew that if she won the nomination, she probably wasn't going to win the race. And that was clear. She was down double digits the entire time she was the general election nominee for the Republicans. You would think that, you know, you'd spend more time on Senate races in Alaska or Colorado or Nevada or Pennsylvania. But no, they kept it on the girl who one time claimed she dabbled in witchcraft in the 1980s or something. Like you said, with the Carl Paladino, it was the media's way of saying, look how crazy these people really are. Can you really trust them? And when a friend of mine would say, you got to talk to me about Christine O'Donnell, I would say, and you pointed it out before, I'll do that, but I want equal time with Alvin Green. On to the final one for today, and that's simply the biggest story of 2010.
Well, I'm going to, you know, almost tell you a little story myself, Greg. I'm going to say, think back to where you were roughly 2 years ago. Obama has won the presidency. The Democrats have huge majorities in the House and Senate. James Carville's writing the book 40 More Years. an allegedly conservative Republican president just used taxpayer dollars to bail out Wall Street, with many Republicans signing on. The economy is, you know, they're saying they saved us from a depression, but the economy is in plummeting and rough shape. And then the government takes over General Motors. During this, you know, late 2008, early 2009 period, I remember a friend saying, this is it. This is the end of modern conservatism. This is the end of America as we know it. And in the future, this country is going to be a European-style social democracy. And everything that goes with that, giant welfare state, cradle-to-grave government benefits, huge regulation of everything in our lives, and really the effective end of entrepreneurship and class mobility. That this was going to, you know, we're going to have our elites and we're going to become, you know, comparable to Germany or France or these places that are wonderful places to visit but are just not America. And we can say at this point, you know, we don't know how this chapter in our national history is going to end. We don't know what the future holds, but we know that at a moment when Obama and all of his allies came into Washington, took power and said, this is how it's going to be. A significant chunk of the American people said, hell no. And it grew and it expanded and it didn't quit even through 2 years. And now we know that there are enough of us to stop it if to not completely roll it back. And I guess that's kind of the fight over the next couple of years. And, you know, this country is not going to roll over and die and become a social democracy over one charismatic candidate and, you know, having the wind at his back. And so I think that's kind of the best story of the year, the most hopeful story of the year, is that this fight isn't over yet, and that we can actually end up with a country that is much more like all the best things we remember of the past, and not this, you know, calcified, gray, you know, Europeanized future.
Oh, man, you went hopeful. I should have let you go second on this one, because now we got to end with mine, because obviously that's great news. The American people responded. But unfortunately, they responded to an agenda that, for the most part, got through. And the biggest item on that agenda was this massive government takeover of healthcare. Yes, we can hopefully repeal some of it, perhaps defund it. But the fact is that he shoehorned this thing through. He rammed it through. And this was a huge win for big government and even socialist supporters who want an agenda where the government pretty much runs everything, like you mentioned. So I think our two biggest stories kind of dovetail well with each other this year, but it'll be interesting to see just how much of this ridiculously horrible legislation will end up being enacted in the long run, because right now it looks like even though the president got his shellacking and we got our bearings back, the damage done could be really, really significant.
Greg, I think you're right. They dovetail well, like a double rainbow, to use one of the cliches of the year. But I have a feeling listeners are going to like mine a lot more than yours.
I hope they do. And I hope it is the bigger story when looking back at this year a couple of decades from now. But we will continue the look back at 2010 as we continue during this holiday stretch. Jim, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Looking forward to it, Greg.
Jim Garrity of NationalReview.com. I'm Greg Corumbus of Radio America. Please join us tomorrow for the next edition of the Three Martini Lunch.